and welcome to the Trash Tapes Podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You are about to experience trash cinema.
Oh my God.
Everyone, and welcome to a brand new season of the Trash Tape. One man's trash is another man's treasure. I am your host, Johan Chapol. It's been a while, I know, but I'm back here now. And usually, I'm now joined this time by my victim and DJ, Edward Harvey. Hello.
I'm glad to be back on the show. This is it's been a while, like you say.
Yeah.
But it's I'm just excited about the new season, and I'm excited about Ninja November.
It is, yeah, because because the last time we did Ninja November, we generally thought it was going to be a thing every year. Then sometimes you'd go like, "Now we can't be asked," but we had to go back because I kind of wanted to come back with ninjas. Because I did promise you, when we first started this many years ago, is that we're going to watch a whole bunch of movies with ninjas in it. I promised you so much more ninjas, and I feel like I disappointed you with the lack of ninja I gave you.
The interesting thing about Ninja November is I totally thought that we invented it. But then I've noticed this is an actual genuine hashtag on Instagram. And as soon as I started posting that we're going to be doing Ninja November stuff, loads of Grindhouse type pages and things like that just responded with a lot of praise for Ninja November.
Oh my God, we're totally doing this. Oh my God, that's actually quite scary. Are we starting a trend?
Well, that's the thing. It's not, I think it was started long before we even attempted it, but it's probably the kind of hashtag everyone thinks that they've done it themselves because it's totally niche.
It's totally niche. Yeah, placing just more excuses for ninjas. But yeah, we've only done Miami Connection with you and me in terms of with actual ninjas in it. And the only other ninja movie I did it with Greg, which was the Dead or Alive movie, which has ninjas in it. So it's not enough ninja. So we're going back to do some ninjas. And this is the thing. You suggested this one because you found a clip and you were laughing way too hard at it. And I said, are you sure we want to do this one? And fudge it. We decided to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're going into the weird and wonderful world of Godfrey Ho, where we talk about Ninja Terminator.
Ninja Terminator. Witness a bloody struggle over the search for the unlimited force of the Golden Ninja Warrior. Ninja Terminator, an outstanding action-packed adventure between a triangle of the deadliest ninja warriors. You want the Golden Ninja Warrior all for yourself. Look at this. Yes, that's my ninja star. Right? It's my ninja star. This is yours. Ninja Terminator, a spectacular story of betrayal and lust for the supreme power of ninja technique.
Hey! Oh, I had a escape!
Ninja Terminator, the weapon, the combat, and the intrigue enter the heart-stopping world of the Ninja Empire. Ninja Terminator. Classical ninja fighters versus a world of guns, explosives, and even high technology. Ninja Terminator. Don't miss it. Coming through to this screen.
Ah, I love Ninja Terminator already. Ah, okay.
The thing is, when I first heard like of this movie and heard of the title,
yeah,
like anyone, you would naturally assume it's going to be about a ninja that's also a Terminator, but yeah, it's not about. It's just a clever title, just like to make you think of ninjas and Terminators, but it's not that at all.
Do you know what the funny thing is? They've never mentioned Ninja Terminator until very late in the movie, where later on they just say, I am here, I am a Ninja Terminator. And it's like, this was never mentioned any other place in the movie.
I know, I can play that.
Go for it.
Our Ninja Empire is supreme, omnipotent, and righteous. Our blood is motivated by ninja spirit. When we take up a mission, we must succeed or die.
So nuts.
Our techniques are dominant and unbeatable. Our style is unique and hypnotically elegant. If you don't want to suffer under the rocks of the ninjas, then give back our golden ninja warrior.
It's amazing.
And I'm the Ninja Terminator.
Like, just like, oh, by the way, I am the Ninja Terminator.
Exactly! They name drop it, even though the ninja. Oh, it's bizarre. And this is the reason why I love this thing. Now, I was skeptical doing this, first of all, for the fact that this was a Godfrey Ho movie. Okay? The last Godfrey Ho movie I watched was A Cobra Against Ninja, which was absolutely appalling. But I think I know why with that one, because that was one that's later in his canon, as it were. So I'm assuming they kind of, I bet that he just kind of ran out and he had very little Richard Harrison footage left. So they just showed me 85% of another movie I don't care about. So I'm like, oh, shit. But
the funny thing about that one is, I don't know if you mentioned it on the show before, but like, I sort of saw a clip of it and said, yeah, let's do a video about this. So you watched the entire movie and I only watched those little clips. So you suffered to watch the entire film and I didn't even watch it.
But that's because I said, like, look, I watched this and then we made a video out of it, which is online. And the video is brilliant because, look, I sat down and watched this entire piece of garbage. And I'll tell you right now, the only bits you're interested in is only 15 minutes. So let's just look at these 15 minutes.
Just, I'm only interested in the Hulkamaniac ninja.
Oh my God, that was hilarious. But yeah, it's that. But, okay, let's step back a little bit and put a little bit of context into what this is. So, Ninja Terminator. So Ninja Terminator is a 1985 American, sort of an American Hong Kong movie, as it were, directed, edited, and written by Godfrey Ho. However, there is a weird little thing you have to think about it. He is what's considered the master of a very particular style of filmmaking, which is literally the cut and paste.
Yes.
It's fascinating. He owns, basically, him and Joseph Lai, who's producer, right, owned a place, basically own a company called, run companies by IFD and Filmmark and sort of work with them a lot. And they basically owned rights to a whole bunch of foreign kung fu films, right? They owned a lot from Taiwan, from Korea, from the Philippines, from even things in Hong Kong, right? They owned the international rights. So what he decided to do is, well, we can't just launch them out like this. It's not going to be as interesting, especially if half the movies are not technically from the genre you think they're supposed to be in. So he says, well, fudge it. How can we sell this movie overseas? Well, you get Richard Harrison to come in, first of all, and shoot a whole bunch of original footage, most of it completely out of context, and then splice it into the movie with some very clever dubbing to make it seem like it's all part of a coherent plot, and then launch it into international markets.
Yeah, so this is like super low budget stuff. It's like you shoot enough footage for one movie and turn it into like 20 movies.
Arguably, yeah.
He's like the Hong Kong's, like, he's like a Ed Wood of Hong Kong, isn't he, basically?
He's actually been labelled as that as well, yeah. So there he is. What's interesting is that what it feels like, all the original footage, especially in something like Ninja Terminator and Cobra Against Ninja, like I showed you, if you cut only those scenes together, there's no movie, right? But there is about a short film of about 20 minutes. But it's just random shit with ninjas that don't really, that has a plot, but doesn't make a lot of sense on its own. So it feels like this is sort of a quick grab way of doing it. I'm not saying Godfrey Ho is a genius or a con artist, but he is a genius and a con artist for doing, I don't know how many movies in his discography, most of them, about 50 of them, have ninja in the title.
Do you know if about, like, were his movies successful at the time? I know they've gained cult status with bad movie fandom now. Yeah. But were they popular at the time in the 80s and 70s?
Like? Well, here's the thing, though, right? The first one that got very popular was Ninja Terminator. This was the first one that got him into like that, right? A lot of the time, these did not get launched in cinemas. They got launched right into VHS and go a whole bunch of stuff like that. Mm. And one of the things is they usually sell it on like the really interesting box art and stuff like that. So it's a little bit like how Mockbusters are now. Do you know when you look at something like The Asylum and you go like, say, oh, it's not Transformers, it's Transmorphers, and it has a really interesting looking cover.
Yeah.
It's that, basically. This one was the most popular one, to the point, and I quote, looking down at sort of its reception, this was labeled at one point in Paste magazine as being number 100 in the 100 best martial arts movies of all time. So it's in the 100 list, just barely reaching the surface.
It's in the list, though.
It's in the list. It's just at 100. Like, it scrapes the barrel just to get there. The Ninja Terminator actually uses 50% of another movie. Do you have any idea what that 50% movie is?
I don't know.
Okay.
No, my knowledge of martial art films isn't that extensive, so I haven't a clue.
So this is the thing. And you know what the sad thing is? It's like you're only able to find this movie in its entirety now only in Korea. Because it's a Korean movie called The Uninvited Guest of the Star Fairy from 1984. What a title. But I can imagine how they said, The Uninvited Guest of the Star Fairy. That's not exciting. Change that to Ninja Terminator and let's add Richard Harrison in it. But yeah, he's done this with a lot of movies, and this was basically his trick throughout the 80s, basically.
Yeah.
He found a cheap way of doing it. This doesn't mean, though, that he never directed actual movies, okay? He has directed actual films without the cut and paste situation, because he used to work as an assistant director in the Shaw Brothers studio.
All right, cool.
So he actually knows stuff. He worked alongside John Woo in the 70s, so he knows how to actually do this.
Yeah.
I think the only reason why he's done it, like, officially with the whole let's do this thing is I think he was trying to find a way to make a very, very quick buck as quickly as possible to fund maybe future movies, I guess.
Well, I can imagine it being profitable, but it's totally shameless, isn't it? It's kind of like, I don't care if it's like crap or not. I'm just going to make money.
This is very much a money thing. However, he does eventually attempt to do movies later on, which are actually like proper. Like, for example, and we're going to do this later on in a podcast in future, he did do two movies with Cynthia Rothrock.
Yeah, I'd heard about that. Yeah, I've not seen them, though.
Well, he did Honor and Glory and the one we're going to review at some point, Undefeatable, which is absolutely amazing.
Are they well-received, those movies?
Undefeatable, yeah. I absolutely love Undefeatable. Well, anyone who's like a secret fan of Cynthia Rothrock, you know, is this is creme de la creme Cynthia Rothrock.
Right.
But it's the thing, though, just looking a little bit more about the man before we talk into the movie and going a little bit more into Richard Harrison for a minute. This is the thing. He's been making movies like this now in from the 90s onwards. He's making trying to make legit movies because I think he's realizing that people are not going to fall for this anymore. So he's got to try to make official movies. He's trying to make bigger action films, bigger things aimed originally at a Caucasian market. He wasn't really interested in the Hong Kong market. He wanted to make it big internationally. While a lot of people in Hong Kong were trying to just make movies for Hong Kong. He said we're going to try and make it purposely big by hiring Caucasian actors, making it based in America or England or Australia, wherever's predominantly white, and try and sell it that way.
You can definitely get a sense of that. He's trying to Americanize the ninja movie.
Yeah, American. The thing is, he's trying to Americanize the ninja movie. I don't even think I think he's the reason why people think ninja movies are rubbish, basically. Because the aesthetic of the ninja movie is partly from him now, if you think about it.
Well, the thing is, when I go and think, oh, I'm in the mood for a ninja movie, I only want to watch the bad ninja movies. I've got no interest in watching a good ninja movie. Yeah. And it's because when I was a kid, a lot of the cheap ninja action figures that I had looked like the ninjas in Godfrey Ho movies. So that's what is the nostalgia of ninjas is that aesthetic, like you say, and it's been established now. And I'm only interested in seeing those type of movies. Yeah, ninja-wise.
Because it is true, when we talk about it in a minute, it's like playing with your ninja toys with bright colours that look something out of G.I. Joe, and you're just bashing them together. So yeah, you're gonna have to. Does this mean that Godfrey Ho is more influential than we realise? We need to talk about Richard Harrison.
I love him. In all these movies, his bits are the best bits.
1,000%.
Yeah.
He's the best thing in the movie. He is probably one of the best things in the movie, and he's very interesting. However, there's a tragic backstory to the reason why he's doing these movies, and you can probably suss it basically.
I know that they are considered the low point of his career, and also the fact that he didn't realize that they were going to be made into loads of movies. He was just filming what he thought was one movie.
Yeah.
And he was just then put into loads of movies without his consent, basically.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So basically he thought he was going to go over because during the time, in the 60s and 70s, Richard Harrison is fascinating. He was basically doing a lot of European B movies, right? He tried in America, but he just wasn't getting consistent work. So he decided to, say, okay, I'm going over to Europe and film a whole bunch of B movies because at least I'm going to get consistently paid. Right.
Yeah.
So, here's an interesting factoid, according to the man himself, he stated as a quote that he was doing the European thing, but however, he was asked originally to do Clint Eastwood's role in A Fistful of Dollars. He turned it down and then recommended Clint Eastwood to do it.
Oh no. That's such a shame. He could have been Clint Eastwood now, in terms of the movies that Clint Eastwood's done.
I know. So basically, Richard Harrison could have been Clint Eastwood, but no, he went and did schlocky movies in Europe and then met Godfrey Ho, which he claims ruined his career. And so he basically retired from acting in the 90s because of that.
I hope he's not still ashamed of it, because there's a lot of fandom now for these movies. And though he's probably still hurt by it, but I hope that he can see that he's got that popularity there. Because he is the best thing about those movies, and people recognise that, you know.
1,000%. It does feel, honestly, that I think now he's appreciating the fact that that's the thing. But, you know, at the time, let's say literally at the time, it's 1985, 1986, and you look at Ninja Terminator and you see this bit of your clip in it. He's sitting there going, and it's the first time you've seen footage from that movie. You too would think it's the worst thing ever and you would think you'd be really sort of bad. But as we've discussed about cult movies, it takes a while to fester a cult following.
Sure.
And now I do feel like he does appreciate it now. I mean, the man is incredibly. The man is 85 right now, so he's just living retired life in California, enjoying himself. But I do think he would look back at it and say, like, you know, at least he's now being recognized again, I guess.
I mean, if he was in one more movie, I would cast him as like a ninja master.
Yes, he's like the ultimate Sifu. He is the master sitting there. He doesn't do anything. He just cross legs. So once in a while, he'll just do like a whip, throw a smoke bomb. Yeah. like there we go. Oh my god, he is the ninja master.
So, but still in a colorful ninja gi, like
it needs to be. He needs a headband. And it says ninja on it.
just give him a long beard, and that's the only new addition.
Yeah. Oh my god. Poor thing on the man, because like you mentioned, he was only originally hired to just be filming 3 movies at once, because that's what a lot of B movie actors do when they go over to Europe or a country. They stay there and say, right, I'll work with this director and film 3 movies. Right. Enough footage for 3 films, which means you get a big paycheck right off the bat. Right? Yeah. Even if it doesn't do well, he gets paid. Then that turned out to be 20 movies, which you were right on. And it was clipped over multiple times. Sometimes the same clips from a clip from one movie is then played again in another movie, just rehashing this footage over and over again. And this came on from 1985 to about 1990. So this is 5 years of using the same footage over and over again.
Yeah, and they often, in Germany, a lot of like montage shots were repeated in the same movie, weren't they? So I'll just repeat that shot again, like later. I've already seen that shot. It's just like filling time.
Well, the best one for me in that bit, by the way, when we look at the montages and talk about the ninja training, I burst into laughter when Richard Harrison is cutting watermelons. Yes. He does it twice!
it's amazing.
It's so good because you think like, oh, the first time you think, oh, that's impressive. And then the second time going, nah, I've already seen the trick, mate. This is not impressive anymore. Why are you cutting watermelons?
I mean, it's not training. It's just showing off, basically.
That is showing off. So, okay, so we've talked a bit about the man. We've talked a little bit about the myth of the legend as Godfrey Ho. So I'm just going to go very quickly and just do the briefest synopsis of this movie according to IMDb, which isn't much.
No.
So, according to IMDb, the plot is basically this, okay? The movie's divided into 2 movies technically, but only on IMDb it only says this. 3 martial arts students search for the Golden Ninja Warrior, a statue reputed to have magical powers. End. That's the plot. But there is so much more in this movie that we're not going to get through because it is bizarre. But also, I want to have, to all our listeners out there, we have decided to do something a little bit different with the structure. We've decided that we're not going to go through the entire plot of the movie. Number one, because as a whole, it's exhausting. It takes a long time for myself to edit. And also, it kind of mentally exhausts myself and Ed when we talk about all the bits. So everything's going to be put into a bit more structures now. Things that we like, talk about certain subjects and spits, etc. But just to give it a bit more of a flow.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got a list of like lines from the movie, mm-hmm. and just sort of little bits of music and things like that, and little bits, sound bites for scenes that we can talk about and things like that. So
yeah,
sometimes we really want to talk about certain bits, but we have to talk about the plot that leads up to that bit. So let's just get to it. If you want to talk about that particular thing, just get to it. Maybe provide a little bit of context, but...
although with Ninja Terminator, I don't think context is going to help. No. But yeah, just talking briefly about it, that plot, the synopsis I gave you there, that is all the Richard Harrison stuff. There is a whole other subplot involving the Korean movie where it stars Jaguar Wong, and who happens to be his goon, who they never meet in the same room. And that seems like a full-blown, like, gangster espionage kind of kung fu flick, like, with genuine plot. Trying to mash it together with this one little weird thing here.
But in this movie, he's basically just, like, an ally of Richard, of Harry.
Yeah,
Harry. So he's basically just doing his work for him, isn't he? And like the only way they link it, and I think Godfrey does this a lot, is by a phone call. So if you've got a shot of him on the phone, you can, any other shot of the original old footage where they're on the phone, you can make it look like they're communicating and link the two together. So he's basically just, Harry is just telling Jaguar to kind of like,
do this, do that,
and like doing his work for him. It should be Richard Harrison doing that stuff.
Because Richard Harrison's, half the time, he's literally just in a tracksuit sitting around his house. It's like, oh my God, have you seen this videotape of this woman getting horribly tortured? You do something about it, Jaguar. It's like, for God's sake, get up your ass.
We do meet, like, at the beginning of the movie, we get, like, an instruction as, like, the ninja empire, don't we? Like, the evil guy. Mm. So that's, I'll just play that because that sets up who these guys are.
Go for it.
Master, everything is prepared for you. Greetings to our master.
My God, the laugh
today
is amazing.
Today is the 20th anniversary of our ninja empire. As our top fighters, you're here to witness the empire's supreme power.
So you got this evil like guy who looks like he's in like a children's Red Devil like outfit.
Yeah,
because he hasn't got the face covering. He's just got a circular kind of. He's got a hood up. He's got the red hood up, and he's got like circular like face cover, and he's got like the beard. So he's kind of like, he just looks like a cheap kind of funny Red Devil.
Yes,
and he's the supreme like ninja master guy, and he's showing these other ninja guys the power, isn't he? Basically, how powerful, if you've got this golden statue,
yes,
you have the power, and he basically shows off this power by, he gets them to like. Like it's hit, like slashing with a sword against his like arm,
yeah.
And it basically doesn't cut his arm. Like he's showing how that's basically the display of power.
It basically makes him like literally uncuttable. So it's like nothing can handle me. Swords getting bashed and clicked all over the place. But then what's funny is what happens right after the ceremony happens, where he shows off the stuff, and obviously Richard Harrison and his amazing mustache, looking at it, looking very perplexed. He then he just basically, as he like goes off somewhere, they just take it. They just take it and just run off with it. Go like, ha ha, master, no, we're gonna have it now. So who's the good guy here? I don't know.
I know. I mean, I have got a clip of that, actually.
Go for it.
Master, the Golden Ninja Warrior is gone.
What's that? Who did it?
Harry, Baron, and Tomashi. They killed all the guards and they got away.
Spread the news. Get the Golden Ninja Warrior back. As for the traitors, make sure they're killed.
But I know what you mean. It's like when I was watching it, I'm struggling to see like who to root for.
Because
The only reason the bad guys are the bad guys is because people like Harry say the ninja empire is evil, so we have to reform it with good ninjas. That's just, I'm just taking his word for it, you know?
Everything is literally compiled out of context, and you have to figure it out, and it's a bit bizarre. But this is leading on to the first thing I want to talk about as a whole, okay?
Yeah.
Because we've shown some clips, I think it's only fair to discuss that we need to talk about the dubbing. Like, we really, really need to talk about the dubbing. It's unique, to say the least.
Well, anything is funny. That's the thing. Even like, I've got a clip of a simple line. I'll play it in a bit.
Yeah.
But it's just a simple line that's like, I burst out laughing just because if that line was just kind of said normally when it wasn't dubbed, it wouldn't be funny.
Yeah.
But it's just that anything can be funny in this movie, which is great.
It's also the fact that whoever they got, the several people who they got to do the voiceovers and the dubbing over, like, clearly, just to make that clear, that is not, that clearly doesn't sound like Richard Harrison doing any of his own dubbing. It just sounds someone else has gone in as well, which is a real shame, because you might as well just record his own dialogue while there. But it is a process that a lot of cheap movies will not record sound on set during the time, because it means that they can shoot things faster because they don't have to worry about audio issues. They could just shoot the scene and then with bad audio and then dub it later whenever. But it does mean then, like, someone like Richard Harrison doesn't really lend his own voice to the movie.
No, but you can see that when they do all of his lines are dubbed and it is the actual dialogue.
Yes.
Because you can see that it's actually what he said when he was there. But obviously some of the stuff like the Korean stuff that's put in there is completely, like, the dialogue is completely replaced. It's not the same stuff.
It's nonsense. It's the only way that Godfrey Ho was able to try and make a plot out of it. By dubbing all of this with his own nonsense and showing, oh, by the way, we're all doing this for the Ninja Empire, when really... everything involving the Koreans, there's barely any ninjas in it. So it has nothing to do with the Ninja Empire. So they try and hack it out a bit by saying, like, there's a fight scene where some people are wearing, like, balaclavas or a sock on their head or something, or wearing a like a bandana over their mouth. But that's it. That's not it. That's a thug.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of, like, hilarious stuff. Like, I love the way when it attempts to do drama... Yeah. Do you remember the graveyard?
Oh, yes. And this is the best example I'm talking about by really badly weird dubbing.
Listen to this.
Ikaza, I don't know what we're going to do without Tamashii. It just doesn't seem fair. Why did God do this to us?
Oh my God.
Hey. Machiko, my sister, don't worry.
He's best.
We'll always remember Tomashi as the wonderful person and brother that he was to us.
Oh my God.
May God rest his soul. But Machiko, I'm bothered. Bothered by his death.
I'm bothered
by his death. It seems so strange.
Death.
This whole thing is damn suspicious, Machiko. Do you think our brother was hiding something? Something illegal that we didn't know about?
Oh my God, this is such exposition
like
dump.
Drugs or smuggling or maybe even triad activity.
Maybe.
Why would anyone want to get rid of Tomashii?
Why?
And then get evidence to show that he was murdered. It just doesn't make any sense at all, does it?
None of this makes sense.
The police say that he was found with pieces of metal in his back.
It's called
it definitely
shuriken.
Means somebody wanted him dead. It's so strange.
It's so strange.
It's so strange.
Come, Machiko.
Oh,
I'm sorry,
God.
I didn't mean to upset you.
Because you keep...
But I have to find out...
You're talking about the murder all the time. Metal in his back.
Oh my God, so much murder.
You understand?
That the last bit, you understand. I actually tried to put a bit of emotion in it at that point, just that one little bit.
But that's the thing, is like a lot of what you're talking about, it the dubbing, there's a few things weird about it. Number one, the choices of accents is astronomical and it just makes everything funny, right?
Yeah.
That's one. Two, because obviously Godfrey Ho is trying to, like, fill in a plot that doesn't exist. A lot of the nonsense is filled in there just to try and literally glue the new footage and the old footage together, which is hilarious. Oh, my goodness. And then, obviously, just I mean, the performances, there's barely any emotion in it other than just the same thing for most of it.
No, I mean, the scenes that were, like, just the filler scenes often were the ones that made me laugh the most. Like, for some reason, I don't know if this made you laugh or not, but, you know, do you remember when Harry is just kind of, his wife is just preparing dinner? Remember that scene?
Yes!
Right, I've got a clip of
that. Yes, please!
What are we eating tonight, darling?
It's your favorite dish.
Steamed crabs.
No, this time I'm preparing a really special dish, something called drunken crab, and I know you're gonna love it.
It's amazing.
What is that?
What is that?
Hang on in there, you'll find out.
What? For some reason, I just burst out laughing when he went, steamed crabs.
It's almost like that is not a sentence that no one should ever say, right? It's like, oh, my favourite, steamed crabs.
And basically, it's just that scene, it's an attempt to put comedy in there because she starts screaming in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And that he's like really worried at first, but then he sees that the crabs have just kind of got loose in the kitchen and they're kind of running around, and yeah. he throws one of his ninja knives or stars into the crab, and then that's like a comedy scene.
And scene ends, and then we never know about the crabs ever again.
Why is there smoke coming out of your oven, Seymour?
That isn't smoke. It's steam. Steam from the
steamed crabs
we're having.
Steamed crabs.
I don't know what about you, but I noticed as I was watching it, the dubbing loves saying the word bastard a lot. Yes. Every character at some point, there's some characters doing more, but everyone's like, oh my god, look at you, you bastard, you bastard, look at you, you bastard. It's I almost kept count. It got so often how much they use that word to fill in like gaps.
I'll play it for the guys.
Victor, you got Machiko, release Lily.
Okay, Victor, I'll send Lily over, you send Machiko.
Okay, it's a deal, you bastard.
But he's like, that's just one example. But he often tags it onto the end of every sentence, doesn't he, that guy, especially. Victor, so that's the guy that Jaguar Wong is up against most of the time, isn't it?
Yeah, he's up against Victor. That scene's also very complicated because we're going to get into Sims at some point where there's loads of plot twists. But yeah, it's... So, the only other reason why anyone would watch this movie, then, is the ninja fights. Can we actually talk about the fights as a whole, actually? Because, I'm not going to lie, this movie's great for the kung fu scenes and the ninja scenes. They are actually pretty good. Like, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, they are good. Obviously, a lot of the best fights are the Jaguar Wong stuff, because he's actually a really good martial artist. Yeah. And a lot of those scenes are really good. But I do actually like the ninja stuff as well. Like, well, one of my favourites... fights. It's just, the fight isn't that too brilliant, but I just love the introduction to it. Yes. It's when one breaks into one of the evil ninjas, the red ninjas, breaks into Harry's apartment.
Yes!
And I've got a little clip of the intruder aspect. The intruder's already in Harry's apartment, and Harry comes back, and then I'll play just the intro to that bit.
Go for it.
So you can hear Harry whistling. He's just coming through the door. He suspects the ninja's there, though.
I remember every detail of this. It was brilliant.
I'll just explain what that is. So basically, Harry's whistling, and he's acting like the ninja isn't there. He hasn't suspected him. But as soon as he comes around the corner, that big like music that comes in, that's like sounds ridiculous, like really loud, is when Harry magically turns into he's got his ninja outfit on, and he's ready for battle. And he literally comes out from a corner. And he goes like Superman, he changes into his Superman outfit. He's in it's normal amazing. Clothes.
Yeah.
And he comes around the corner and he's in his ninja outfit. And that music is when it kicks in when he's in his ninja outfit ready for battle.
That ninja outfit, by the way, is this the one where he's in full camo?
Ever in camo, isn't he?
Everything else after that, because at the beginning he was all in black, and then after that he's now in camo. It's hilarious how he pops in a camo outfit. And here's the thing, that fight in there is just a calling card situation, but it's hilarious because when the fight happens, they do a couple of moves, but a lot of it's just like fire, smoke, suddenly he just pops in and the guy just disappears. It's like, what happened? This took seconds.
I love the gadgets that they have on their like swords. Like you've just said, one of them's got a flamethrower on the end, one of them's got smoke, and sometimes you can put out the fire with the smoke, weirdly.
Yeah, so bizarre. There's also a bit, and I love the bit, because this is the pieces where they're just sharing shurikens to each other, sharing ninja stars as a calling card or something. And there's one bit where he takes out what looks like to be some kind of sai or something, and at one point, the guy froze the ninja star, but he grabs it, and it just keeps spinning on his thing. It's like, look at it. Look how I grabbed it. I am such a ninja. So good. All the other ninja fights as well. This is where you're first properly introduced to teleportation, because the ninjas can teleport, which is all fantastic. And especially the fight near the end, which is absolutely preposterous. It's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I love the montages though. Basically, the preparation for battle. So like they get a challenge. Harry often gets challenges, isn't he? By like a ninja.
Yes.
So he has to get ready.
So, which one are you thinking of?
There's a bit where Harry and his wife like arrive back at the house, and there's like a message on the window.
Yes.
And his wife sees it first, and it says, you know, challenge the one of the other ninjas. And I'll play that because then you can hear the montage music kick in.
Jesus.
Harry, no! So that's the message on the window. And then this music kicks in.
Love it. So good. Oh my god.
So basically, he's basically on that scene is where, I mean, they play that music when he's chopping up the melons, but like you mentioned earlier, but that one in particular is when he's surrounded by candles.
That's my favourite one!
And he's got like candles like on his sword, and I think he's kind of just like chopping the candle as it's on the sword, so he's kind of lifting up then chopping the candle. But it's like they're actually on the blade of his sword.
It's impressive! Like, this is the thing, it's impressive, you know, it looks really cool. There's a bit where he's got his piece of the Golden Ninja Warrior and how he's, like, smacking his arm, making it feel like his arm cannot be defeated. Really, really genuinely good stuff. Compare that with also, like, anything with the actual, it's kind of weird because they are two very different kind of fights. The ninjas are silly. They are full-blown silly, and it's brilliant. And you can also see when they are fully wide-shot, you can kind of tell that isn't Richard Harrison doing backflips and cartwheels.
Well, I imagine he wasn't a martial artist, was he? So I imagine a lot of the fights weren't him. It's just that the bits where he pulls down his face mask so you can see that it's Richard Harris.
The only thing that disappointed me slightly is I wish there was one thing they kept from Cobra Against Ninja, which is his magical how I leave a fight situation. That never appears here. I was disappointed where it's like I said, in Cobra Against Ninja, it's the only bit I really liked where every time after every fight, he would lower his mask. He'd do a whoosh, he'd do a backflip, and he'd disappear halfway through. I'm like, that's an exit!
They should do that in all the movies, shouldn't they?
I know, right? Just to emphasize in this universe, that's how ninjas leave.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
At the Jaguar Wong fights, though, just briefly, because they are genuinely very good. They are.
Yeah.
If you're wanting genuine kung fu, watch all of them. He's doing really good stuff. He does it with a lot of speed. But what I've noticed with Jaguar Wong that made me laugh is he only basically got two moves. He just does it in like really fast succession. He kicks a lot, and instead of punching, he slaps people a lot.
Yeah, there's like. What did he think about Jackie Wong? Did he? I thought he was an arrogant cock, to be honest, and he pissed me off. I know it was fat. He was kind of it was cool then to be like arrogant, if you know what I mean, as a hero. Yeah. And he's a bit like a Bruce Lee type, isn't he? He wants to be. He's like a cheaper Bruce Lee. Mm. But there's one fight where he's so arrogant that he's got his hands in his pockets.
Yeah, I remember
so
that.
So he's just doing kicks for a bit until he realizes, oh, actually, I might have to use my hands for a little bit because the guy is throwing some punches at me. But for about 5 minutes, he's just got his hands in his pockets and he's like just using his legs, showing off.
It is showing off, but it's also very fucking impressive. But that's the thing is, when he does take his pads out of his pockets, he doesn't punch. He goes and slaps them. And the slaps are ridiculous. Like, one slap makes someone almost backflip. It's like, wow.
I mean, the sound effects help. Like, the sound effects are pretty impressive. But do you know, you notice that every time, like, obviously the punch, like, all the slap kind of noises, I've got a real, like, it's like a snare hit, isn't it? It's kind of really like a slappy kind of hit. Mm. But, like, whenever a lot of the kick sounded, like, really weird, like, quite hollow, didn't they? Like, foo, foo, like that.
Yeah.
Stopped very odd.
Yeah, the Foley and those fight scenes are very generic, sort of like the ones you'd expect from most of those kind of movies. I clearly suspect that Godfrey Ho had a sound library they probably got from the Shaw Brothers, from working from the Shaw Brothers.
Yeah.
Got some of them and then plopped them in there, which is why it might not sound entirely like it should be, but my God, is it funny to watch. Can we very briefly talk about the ending of that, of the ninja fight, which is the most preposterously bizarre thing? The last ninja fight, where they finally get all three ninjas are all fighting together to take over the to beat the bad ninja. Okay, I love the fight because I genuinely like what they were doing with it. This one actually had a little bit of psychology, because the bad ninja who killed it from Tamashii, who is like a one-off side character and is the only link as to why the Korean movie exists, by the way. The bad ninja stole the body, right? The body of the ninja, while the other two guys stole the arms of the ninja, right? So that means that whenever anyone tried to punch the guy in the belly or in the gut, it did absolutely nothing. And it's doing fudge all, like it's doing nothing. And while the other guys, their arms are the thing that are fine, right? Like you could hit them in the arms, but nothing else.
Oh, right. So they're only armored in the arms then. So you could, all right. Okay, cool. So the best bit is the body then. The best piece you need is a body.
Yeah, and it's like, say, but I need the arms to finally fulfill myself. And he does that, and it's really, really genuinely a good fight. But then it gets really weird suddenly, where once all the pieces are put together and then he prays, somehow there's an explosion at the end, and then it just cuts.
I know, I've actually got a clip of that. Well, let's play this.
All right, kill me.
Your death will serve no purpose.
I've lost faith. I can never return to the Ninja Empire.
So, reforming the statue.
Yeah. Very dramatic here. I love it. What is this? It's amazing! It's like a disco!
Basically, I had to get that clip because it sounds like... like a game show, you know, when you win a prize. And that's exactly, that music kicks in when the Golden Warrior is formed back together again. And that's what that music hits at that point.
And it's perfect. And then, literally, the last, quite literally, 10 seconds, as Richard Harrison is holding the statue and getting things sorted and he's walking away into the sunset, there's just a fucking explosion. Right at the back. He looks confused as to why there's an explosion. He's like, huh? And then cuts. Like, we never figure it out.
But let's face it, a lot of this stuff isn't explained in this movie.
You don't
There's
need
a lot
to.
Of unexplained things, like the Garfield phone of Richard Harris.
Yes! Which we're going to get to in a minute, because let's move on, basically, to something else I want to talk about. This movie has so many odd choices and things, right? Things that, in an overall context, you're sitting there going, quoi? And like you don't know what it is. So, for example, why does Ninja Master Harry, who is supposed to be a ninja master, who seems to be in quite good wealth to some point, right? Why does he have a Garfield phone, of all the things?
I literally just think that that's a weird, it's like a prop that Godfrey Ho just kind of found. He thought, oh, this is kind of interesting. I'll just put it in the movie because it's quirky and fun. Doesn't matter if it doesn't work. I'm not going to explain it.
Do you think that all the weird stuff actually is Godfrey Ho's, like, own shit? I think it's just like
the thing where, oh, this is what American people have.
Americans people like Garfield. Americans like Garfield. You Western man, you white man, you like Garfield. it's funny though. It is a great little phone, because when you pull it out, it's like his eyes are closed when he got a link, but his eyes open every time you get it off the hook. It's so good.
Well, I've got a clip right that will have two odd choices in it, because it's got a phone call, so you can picture the Garfield phone.
Yes.
But also, it has the bit about where the robot arrives and gives him a message. So let's just listen to this. That's the doorbell, by the way.
That's a terrifying doorbell.
The smoke comes out the door, and here's a little toy robot.
And I'm talking a toy robot. It's not like a full-size robot. It is a tiny kid's toy. With menacing music, by the way.
Rachel.
Bloody hell.
There's a Garfield phone.
Listen to me. Traitor, I believe that you've received a death message from our ninja empire.
How does he know?
Ninja is supreme and you have double-crossed it. Why did you do that?
The ninja empire is evil. I have to reform the ninja empire. That is why I took away the golden ninja warrior.
You've got 3 days in which to return the golden ninja warrior, or else you die.
My God.
Go to hell.
That's his answer.
Go to hell.
Go to hell.
Oh, brilliant.
But what I love about that is that you can picture those two odd choices all in one there. You can picture the Garfield phone, you can picture the toy robot. And I love the way he gets the phone call immediately, and he knows that the message has been delivered. This is like...
Ninjas know.
This is before the days of having, like, sort of GPS and things like that, and, like, internet and things like that.
I'm going to run with that just ninja intuition. Like, ninjas just know when shit happens, right? But it's the thing that, like, the robot appears several times as the messenger. Like, at one point, the robot drops off a VHS of the thing. And this bit's funny. It goes, there's a VHS tape that's dropped over to Harry's house. Like point later on, which is just literally, it's supposed to be like Makita, who's like the sister of the other thing from the Korean movie, being tortured, right? It's oh no. And it's kind of funny because the wife's there as well, looking confused, like, oh, honey, why are we watching this snuff movie?
But they watch a lot of it, don't they, before
they come to the conclusion that this is serious. But here's the funny thing.
This is riveting, darling. Let's keep watching.
It's so bad. But on top of that, it's just clearly them watching the actual movie, because it's not even like it cuts to the movie. No, it's them watching the movie from the TV. Okay, yeah. So this is why, because I'm thinking, like, hey, this is supposed to be like like a shoddy torture film. They made, there's so many camera angles in that torture movie. Yeah. Everything from close-ups and everything. He's like, oh, I'm just imagining if that was a case where the, like, you know, Victor and all the bad guys are going, look, we want to make this torture movie feel very authentic, okay? Can we, you know, stop it right there. Well, I need a close-up of you whacking her with a cane, please.
Yeah, they've got a proper television studio, haven't they?
It's full blown. It's great. But yeah, the robot is just fantastic with that bit, and there's loads of these kind of weird choices, and some of them, admittedly, are from the Korean movie. Like, there is a character we haven't talked about yet. His name is Tiger, and I love Tiger, but the simple fact that Tiger is this one is, for some reason, he's wearing a blonde wig the entire movie.
Well, not the entire movie. This is the thing. What's interesting about it is that I thought that was just... it meant to be his hair, right, in the movie. Yeah. But it's not, he chooses to wear the wig, doesn't he? Because there is a scene where he does take the wig off to fight. It's like, no, I'm going to take my wig off to fight now.
It's so bizarre because you can clearly see, to me anyway, you can clearly see, like, that's a wig, mate. So why make this choice? Because it just doesn't suit the rest of his face. It is a big, like, bob wig, by the way. It's like, it's almost like a 50s ladies blonde bob wig.
It's a bit like He-Man's hair. Remember He-Man?
Yes! Like, oh, blonde, my God, it is.
He's got a blonde fringe. He's all blonde. He's got a fringe, and it kind of just, like, bobs around, like you say.
Oh my
favourite scene with him is, this is another, it fits in with the odd choices kind of category, yeah, is when he meets with the professor.
Yes, the professor who we only see once in the movie. And just for context, number one, the professor is a brilliant character. It only appears once, and I'm disappointed we never see him again. But also, so the professor is invited by Tiger to talk to build a time bomb. And this the entire exchange is fucking hilarious.
Let's listen to this.
Good to see you, Professor Sung.
Well, it's good to be here.
We've been waiting impatiently for your visit here.
Well, I can certainly assure you, you won't be disappointed. I've just invented something superb. Mr. Chan, you mentioned a change in plan, didn't you?
This is true.
The original plan we had in mind for this type of bomb changed, which is why we requested you to redesign it as a time bomb instead.
We could redesign it as a time bomb, why not?
I'm sure that you'll be satisfied with what I have constructed.
Good.
It's so weird.
A fine piece of workmanship.
Thank you. This bomb is as easily as powerful as the others, and with remote control.
But will it blow my enemies up?
Well, I'd say sky high.
That knows how to crack a joke.
It's just what I need. Thank you, Professor So.
That scene is absolutely amazing. It's what you think of, like, a comedy villain. Like, the professor's like a comedy villain, isn't he, that builds bad things.
Oh, it's like a parody of itself, okay? And yeah, there's a reason why we can't entirely just blame Godfrey Ho for this, because this was a movie done by someone else entirely. And so I bet you, so this was the other director's choice, basically. Yes. But it is the dubbing, and the dubbing is responsible by Godfrey Ho to make this even more preposterous than it already is. Oh, that's so brilliant.
It's just the inserted laughter, like, because obviously they have to kind of, they notice that the actors are, like, sort of smiling or laughing slightly, so they have to insert this kind of, like, cut and paste laugh, don't they? It sounds the same pretty much every time, and it's in between a lot of lines. It's great.
It's sometimes in between sentences that you think should be continued, so it's like, but it feels like, ha ha ha, we are here now. It's like, my goodness, it's like he needs, it's almost like a tick.
Supreme ninja.
Master supreme ninja. Supreme Ninja.
Other weird moments in this whole movie. Again, this one's now more from the Korean side, and I'll show a few bits there. Is the sex scenes are weird.
Yeah. There's like, it's just kind of, I suppose, so with sex scenes, you just kind of, especially back then, you just put them in because it's kind of like, oh, we've got a sex scene in it. I've heard it's got a sex scene. Yeah. But my favourite is like the one that seemed to have like Pink Floyd music in it. You remember that one?
Yeah. This is the one where I believe it's Victor and Lily, because Victor and Lily are a couple kind of thing. But Jaguar Wong is not only trying to mack on Makito, is also trying to do a double macky thing with Lily. It gets a, basically Jaguar gets around, but Lily is Victor's girl. And then they get to the what I consider to be the weirdest, one of the weirdest sex scenes I've ever seen, with Pink Floyd playing in the background and silhouettes are happening.
It's like you're trying to be arty. Let's just listen to it.
Go for it.
So most of it is in silhouette. You can see the silhouettes of them going at it, can't you? While this is playing.
So bizarre. And they don't even look like comfortable poses either.
Well, he does a pose where he's got her legs over his shoulders.
They're just going lift. And just to talk over this slightly, this is Pink Floyd, isn't it? Like this is, I bet you it is Pink Floyd.
It certainly sounds like, because I was watching thinking, this sounds like a bit like Pink Floyd, but when I was doing a little bit of like digging around, looking at the research, It famously has ripped off Pink Floyd, but it said on Wikipedia, so like yeah. That probably is that bit. Yeah,
yeah, he's done this a lot, because he's actually, according to Wikipedia and a few other bits as well, he has ripped off a whole bunch of people. Pink Floyd he's made, Tangerine Dream is another one, a couple of goth bands, a couple of Japanese artists, loads of people who have literally, and also just flat out music from different movies, which, can I just say, from the very opening of the movie, by the way, where just the title sequence kicks in.
Yeah.
My God, doesn't that sound a little bit, at the beginning, it sounds a little bit like, I think it sounds a little bit like Star Wars.
Do you mean this? Now that is an ident.
I know, but it is flipping impressive.
The logo just comes up and that just hits you in the face like, ba ba ba, I'm a movie. Rah!
But then there's a funny thing. I knew I was going to be in for a ride and I was going to enjoy it, because the first few notes is fucking Star Wars. Star Wars. And you're like, oh no.
It's definitely a sound alike of Star Wars, yeah.
1,000%. I think that's what I think most of these may be sound alikes, but with Pink Floyd in particular, my God, that sounded exactly like Pink Floyd in that sex scene.
Yeah.
It was awkward. A lot of it just seems to be just padding or ways to sort of make it feel quirky than it already is.
Yeah.
But one of the things in particular are plot twists. There are a lot of plot twists in this movie, which I won't go for all of them. But that's because in order to kind of make sense between the Korean movie and the new footage, there seems to be a plot twist every few minutes just to try and make some kind of like actively coherent sense.
Yeah. Yeah, so what are your favourites then?
Okay, my favourite one is, this is the thing, where they first meet up with, the first time Jaguar Wong, there's two of them. One is Jaguar Wong, who first time goes and meets up with Lily for the first time, and they bang and they have a good time. A little rapey, but they have a good time. And,
I've got a clip of that if you want me to play.
Go on, please.
What the hell are you doing, you damn jerk?
You don't remember me.
Oh, God.
Sounds dead creepy with the laughter.
Lily.
It is!
You never could quite fool me, could you?
We were over a long time ago.
Come on, Lily. I don't believe that you really feel that way. You remember how we felt about each other? My feelings haven't changed, and I bet yours haven't either. Look at me.
Gets awkward here.
So basically, at the end there, you can hear him. He just grabs her and like starts like snogging her like against then, her will, and then it leads to a. And then she kind of starts going, "Oh, Jaguar," like in her voice, you can hear it, and then it leads to a sex scene.
Oh, it's so bad. I mean, look, I get it. It was the '70s and eighties, and they kind of did that kind of thing with men overpowering women, and women are into it. Obviously, this would never be allowed today, but it's funny in this case because it just happened so fucking quickly. But. Right after the sex scene, one of my favorite plot twists, and one after the sex scene, it's like, "Hey, baby, how was last night?" And then Lily goes over and says, "We can't do this anymore." It's like, but why? It's because I've got a new man in my life. His name is Victor. It's like, this was quick.
Yeah. Like, well, he's totally not bothered anyway, is he? He's like, he's getting ready to go. He's like putting his pants on and he's kind of like, "Yeah, I'll see you later then."
Yeah, don't worry, we'll sort it out later. But just to know, I'm after Victor. And it's just like, this was a plot revelation that just happened really fucking quickly. There's a few other plot twists as well that I'm into as well. Do you have one in particular sticks out in your mind?
I kind of like the bit where they try to do the exchange, but it's not actually Lily.
Oh, no. Yeah,
and that's the bit where you get a lot of the, "You bastard."
So basically that's the scene we saw before where he's got, so Jaguar had Lily and then Victor had Mojito and they were about to sort of swap over. And you tease that saying, "Don't worry, we're going to put on this fancy scarf over your head and everything," like an actual tease. And then it just ends up being a dude who just kung fu's him in the face like, she was never here the whole time. And it's like, my goodness.
And to link back to the other clip we played earlier, so Victor at that point has that bomb, the time bomb that was been mentioned earlier, doesn't it?
Yes.
Like in that other clip. So he's going to he says, "At any moment I can blow up."
I can blow her up at any minute. But yeah, there's one other plot twist I like, and it's just because we know it's coming, but it's just the funniest reveal. Again, Jaguar Wong, he's driving to pick up to kidnap Lily because they're going to do the exchange, and he's in a taxi, and he's driving the taxi, and the guy's like, "Where are you going?" "Don't worry, I know the route." He's like, "This is the wrong way." "Oh, shut up, you! I know where we're going." And keeps driving, and then by the end of it, once he beats the guy up, he just looks over to Lily. He's like, "Who are you?" And then he just reveals by taking off the sunglasses, the wig, and the mustache. And it's like the funniest thing. It's like, "Oh no!"
It is a bit like a Scooby-Doo type reveal, isn't it? Just like
it is. It's so funny
because Lily, off.
Yeah, because Lily couldn't see a thing. We all know it was Jaguar, but Lily's sitting there going, "Oh no!" But also, she doesn't seem that bothered. I love how Lily doesn't seem to be bothered by anything. It's like, "Oh, am I getting kidnapped again? Oh no, I'm so used to this."
I mean, it isn't really I've got another bit I want to talk about. It isn't really a plot twist, but it's like, I love it when Jaguar gets kidnapped and he's strapped to a chair, and the guy who's got him chained up. He's like trying to be a polite guy, and he's like, Jaguar says, "Would you at least give me a cigarette as my last wish?"
Yeah.
And this is like weird polite exchange about cigarettes, which is hilarious.
"Tell me, can a dying man have a last wish?
Huh?
A cigarette?"
I can't love the laughter.
"I guess so. After all, it's unlikely. But you'll contract lung cancer before I kill you."
"A sensitive guy. I appreciate the concern you show for my health.
Don't bother."
How bizarre.
"No thanks. I really prefer my own brand. You'll find them in my bag.
If you know it's not too much
trouble for you."
"You know it's a trap." "Hmm.
But just to show you how good-natured I am, I'll do it."
"Oh, really?"
"I'm sorry. My hands are tied. Do you think you could possibly light it for me and have one yourself?"
"Thanks." My God, this is so...
I'd hate for you to remember me as a mean son of a bitch, so go ahead.
I don't usually smoke this breath, but I'll do it for you.
There is some sexual tension going on here.
It's just so polite, isn't it? It's great.
And the funny thing is, once it gets to that end there, suddenly he lights a cigarette, and then it becomes a full-blown fight scene, right? Literally after that point. It's fucking hilarious. But finally, just to sort of wrap things up before going ahead, we've shown a lot of this, but I just kind of want to talk about the music very quickly again, how absolutely wonderful it is. Because we've been talking about it throughout the whole thing, but it is mind-bogglingly wonderful that the music here is genuinely, most of it bangs. I would listen to some of this on my own because it's genuinely quite good.
Yeah, there's just so many good bits. I mean, I'll just play one for example. Like, there's a nightclub scene.
Mm.
And there's a bit where they're just dancing along to this. And it'll sound a bit distorted because it's ripped from the movie, but it's like...
It's good!
It's like really good 80s pop, isn't it?
Like really good music. It's a shock to me that this movie has... got a genuine understanding of how to pull off a good beat. I'm noticing maybe this is the thing. Maybe ninja movies are the secret place of finding great music. Look at Miami Connection and all their bangers.
Yeah, and the opening main theme to Ninja Warrior reminded me so much of like an 80s sitcom. I've actually got a better quality version of that.
Ooh, okay.
It's when, like, the actual chorus-type element hits. It reminds me so much of a sitcom.
You can just imagine everyone out going into freeze frame. Hello! Everyone here! Richard Harrison. Everyone's just popping in frame. Oh, my God.
Wait for it. It's coming in soon.
It
sounds like Dallas or something at this point.
It does! It sounds really good. It's nonsense how kind of good this music is, and I feel really bad because the movie's really shit. But the music bangs! It's so good!
It is. It's just so special. It's like, it really gets you pumped for the movie.
Yeah, and this is the thing, right? I'm not going to lie about that. The music really helped with the fight scenes and the weirdness and everything else. And yes, most of them are probably rip-offs from other things. But it's just, honestly, the production value of the music was good. And it really helped me. It was a big surprise for me.
I mean, it's probably just because it's stolen.
I love how you say, look, it's not really, it's not the Godfrey Holmes.
The music is good because it's probably actually really good music that you just nicked.
I would not be surprised, actually. It's like, oh, we found this track, just slide that in there, or just get a composer to just sort of fix
that. No one will see, the artist won't see these movies, it's fine.
Yeah. And yeah, so basically that is Ninja Terminator down to a T. It's a movie that is an absolute mess. But it's also got so many moments of glory. And we have to thank Godfrey Ho for making such an elaborate mess. One little factoid, by the way. I've just discovered this. That Godfrey Ho has been making movies for a while, obviously. His last movies were like in the year 2000 or so, right?
Yeah. He's retired now, isn't he?
He's retired from filmmaking itself. Yeah. But in 2010, and I think he's still in there, he's now teaching in the Hong Kong Film Academy. So actually, Godfrey Ho, the man who made this movie, is teaching a bunch of filmmakers in Hong Kong how to make movies.
Is that right? I show you how to cut and paste.
This is what you do. Find something cheap and then fill it in. A-star, congratulations.
It's the epitome of fixing post, isn't it?
It is. It's like first of all, you really need to find the best editor in the world. Editors can fix all problems. Just get any piece of crap. Fix it and post. So good. Generally. So yeah, I just found that little tidbit before we move on. So yeah, that was Ninja Terminator, which we went through all our best bits. We talked about our favorite moments. And we've talked about some very interesting plot bits and things like that in enough detail that another reason why we did it is because if anyone genuinely has a curiosity and wants to watch these movies, you can technically watch them now without feeling entirely spoiled. At least I feel so.
Yeah. A lot of them are under the Wu-Tang collection. Have you noticed?
Yeah. Yeah. It's genuinely a thing. Great thing about this one we saw entirely on YouTube because, like, who's really good at finding the rights for Ninja Terminator and all these movies? So, yeah, just find them on there and watch it with us next time. It's genuinely a good time. So, let's rate this puppy, shall we? Can we bring back the Trashometer?
We can indeed.
Trashometer.
Thank you. So, let's talk about this again. Thank you. First of all, thank you very much. If this is your first time, welcome for joining us. But if this is your first time, we need to talk about how we rate our movies. We're going to still keep these ranking systems because I genuinely think this is the only way to rate bad movies, which is you need to show how tolerable you are to bad movies. So, let's start. At the very, very bottom, you basically got tame. Tame means it is boring. It's not actually a fun watch, but it's because it's dull. There's nothing fun, right? It's not really that trashy, actually. Sometimes it might just be just either just a blandly made movie or just it's a goodish movie, but it's just not got any bad trashy movie elements. Then you've got tiny bit trashy. Tiny bit trashy means that there are some trash elements to it, but there could have been more. There could have been milked more. You could have more fun with how trashy and bad the movie could be to be more funny, entertaining. Right in the middle, you got trash. It's the perfect trash level. It is it's the sweet spot. It's the golden goose. It is the ultimate golden ninja warrior of bad movies, okay? It's impenetrable. Next step afterwards is too trashy. Too trashy means that all the bad elements in the movie are actually starting to get on our nerves a bit. We're still having fun, but there are some bits that are going, this is slightly annoying, this is not really working for me, this might be slightly offensive, this is, you know what I mean? You're still having fun with it, but it still has moments where you're thinking, this is a bit much. And then finally, we have torture. Torture basically means we hated this movie. And we hated it not because we were bored. We hated it because it was too bad. It was not entertaining anymore. We were getting angry at it. We were getting more annoyed at it. There was no way we could really enjoy it. We've had a few movies on this tier, such as Street Fighter the movie and Southland Tales have filled right up on here. But just to give you a little tease of what I think, I don't think this movie's going to fall under that. So, where would you put this on the Trashometer?
For me, it's a very easy decision. It's perfect trash.
It is. It's perfect trash.
There's no other way you can say it, because I can't argue any other point. From my point of view, it's just a perfect balance. And that's another thing. I'll go on about the rating system again, just in case, because people sometimes are confused with our rating system in terms of like it being like a numbering. It's not a numbering. It's like, think of it like a scales.
Yeah.
Like you want the perfect balance, don't you? In between. So like, it is perfectly in the middle and it is balanced. It's got everything you want from a bad movie, and it's not. It doesn't like. It hasn't got any boring elements either. I was like, the pacing of it is kind of perfect, really, in terms of like, it's a terrible movie. But you're
terrible.
Entertained throughout. It's so funny. And there's just everything you want, really.
Going to pacing, basically, because there's so much action going on, there's a fight scene literally every 5 minutes. You can never be bored of this movie. That's why the lower tiers don't work for us in this case, because I was never bored. There was always something going on. And some of it was genuinely good and surprised me. The music, surprisingly very good. Some of the actual fights are very good. And, you know, are almost top tier. Then you got some weird shit, like sex scenes and robots and wigs and the colourful ninjas and everything else, the Garfield phone. There's enough there to say, like, why is this? And then you kind of, and it balances itself out that if you watch this like I did with about 2 pints... With 2 beers at the ready, just about to sit down and watch it, you're going to have an amazingly good time. And so, yeah, I actually fall in the trash as well.
Yeah, I suppose if I was going to give it any, we spoke about it as we were going through reviewing it, but the only negative aspect is like the fact that you don't know who to root for. But that doesn't ruin your experience.
Nah.
It still is very entertaining.
It is. And this is the thing as well that I would put a slight caveat for this. We are perfectly fine with watching bad dubs because it's kind of our job in this case. But for people who are not into dubbing or people who just are not into, like, watching foreign films with bad dubbing on it, this, it could test their patience with the Korean side of things in particular, because then they go like, what is this? Whatever. But other than that, honestly, I think it's perfect. And I think for me, since I love watching bad dubs anyway, it just adds more to the comedy value. So I'd say, yeah, I'm glad we both agree on this. This movie is trash. It's got to be
perfect trash.
God, I missed that. It's been a while since I learned the Trashometer. It's been a while. But yeah, this is perfect trash. This is a movie that if you just want to switch your brain off and have a good time, just watch this. It's great. There are other ninja movies out there, some of them better, some of them worse, but this one is right in the middle. It's perfect. So there you go. Wonderful. So yeah. Right then, so just before we sort of wrap up, like I said, thank you for joining us on this new season. We're going to do this new season, we're going to try this new format, and we're going to try and not go entirely with deadlines. We're going to try and just keep something more consistent going, maybe every 3 weeks or something of that ilk, just to keep something flowing. I'm basically trying myself not to feel overworked, because unfortunately this podcast is a little bit of work, and unfortunately... I do have a full-time job, which is very stressful, and everyone knows about it. So it's I wanted to streamline it. So I hope you enjoy the new format. I think it'll work well.
I definitely had fun with this format. I think it's good because we're just talking about everything we loved or didn't like, aren't we? In getting straight to it, you know.
Yeah. This hopefully means that some of the podcasts could be trimmed down a bit, because one thing I noticed is I did a recording of an episode a while ago, which will be a lost episode at some point when I sit down and do it, where I recorded with a few people, as a few of my friends who were for a D&D movie. Okay, so we did Mazes and Monsters starring Tom Hanks, which is horrendously bad, but. Because we'd followed the original format and the way my buddies like to talk, and there's so much to talk about, the recording lasted 3 hours. 3 hours. So it got to the point where thinking, how the hell am I going to edit this to something coherent and to something be like my goal being about 90 minutes? I like my podcast to be about 90 minutes or less. Some people like them longer. I know, Ed, you prefer them longer sometimes because you do that for your commute.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it is a preference thing. Some people don't mind a big, long, deep dive into a movie, but other people, like yourself, just wanted to get straight to it, and you know.
Yeah, and so cut the waffle and get to the point. So hopefully, this will streamline it, which means it may perhaps means there's more episodes in the works, and maybe new approaches to things. Maybe we can do a few specials this way, because this means the way we do it this way, it means we don't necessarily just have to tackle one movie. We could do a franchise if we wanted to, because if we follow this format, we could do a whole. We could say we're going to sit down and do the entire Hellraiser franchise, and go, oh dear.
Pinhead in Space at some point, he's coming up.
Yeah, Pinhead in Space is definitely one of the books. But yeah, fantastic. We're not going to do many teasers. However, there's only one thing I am going to say. Very soon, though, obviously, we're recording this in like early November, but soon we're going to be getting into Christmas. And so I wanted to just tease this because we are going to do it because we have to do it. We're doing the Star Wars Christmas special.
Fantastic. I knew that I'd come up at some point soon.
We had to do the Star Wars Christmas
special. We've been talking about that for a while, haven't we?
Yeah, and I'm thinking, how can we do this? No, we need to talk about this. It is one of the things, honestly, that I haven't seen, but I know a hell of a lot about. So it'll be quite interesting to actually sit through it and see how I feel.
Yeah, I've not seen it either. Is it accessible quite easily?
It should be, yeah. I don't think anyone cares about the rights to Star Wars Christmas special. I bet you. I'm going to have to check because I got Disney Plus. Oh my God, what if it's on Disney Plus?
It probably is, to be honest.
It might be on Disney Plus. Be like Star Wars Christmas special, like 4K edition.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to have to check. But yeah, that'll be something to do. But yeah, Wonderful. This has been fun. And hopefully we'll see you guys in a little bit. So until next time, keep an eye on your trash. There might be some treasure in there. See you guys later.
See you guys.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description, so please follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.